We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Sam, listeners, Light Years Podcast, do you ever feel like you're always on? What do you do when you need a moment to chill? How do you like to hit the reset button to get ready for what's next? There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Wow, that's amazing. That way you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open up a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment and made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
And welcome to the Light Years Podcast. Sam Esfandiari here. I am joined by Aaron Larsoul. We're recording this Sunday night, 5 p.m., halftime of the Knicks-Atlanta Hawks game. Some news and notes before we get into the pod. Andy and I will be doing 2 to 3 recordings a week during the offseason. We will still be having locker room listener interactive shows. Details of that is to follow. Also, if you haven't checked it out, we officially launched a Light Years merchandise store. We have 3 t-shirts up there right now, official Light Years logo shirt, a Steph Better shirt, and we will have hats, we'll have hoodies. There'll be a lot of stuff in there. As always, link will be in our link tree. That's linked directly to all our social media accounts. So feel free to check by there. I think there's some good stuff on there. If you're a fan, I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
But oh yeah, I'm gonna need. I got to put my order in. You know, I got to support. I'm putting my order in.
I appreciate it, Aaron. Okay, we've now had a couple days to marinate on Sunday's disappointing overtime loss to the Memphis Grizzlies. Long off season ahead. A lot of decisions for the Warriors. Honestly, I kind of feel like we should probably slow play this. It's not like any of these decisions are going to be made next week. So there's a lot of time to expand and really get into this. But with the playoffs going on, there's just so much to talk about here. So I want to start with a Steve Kerr quote. Steve Kerr gave this quote Friday after the game. "I think this season was absolutely a success. We would have loved to make the playoffs and try to make a run. Says the emergence of role players makes this a successful season considering next year's goals." I'm going to paraphrase it a little farther. I think his general point was we discovered some players and feel like we're going to go into next season in better position to put together a roster to compete. What are your thoughts on it? Do you consider the season a success for the Warriors?
No. I mean, he's lying. He's not completely lying, because I think it is meaningful that the Warriors discovered JTA and Jordan Poole. And those guys both look like rotation pieces on decent team, on at least at minimum a decent team next year. Right. And coming into this year, you didn't know what you had with a lot of guys. So I think that is meaningful long term. But no, the season's not a success. Steph Curry, there's a reasonable argument for Steph Curry to win the MVP. He's obviously going to finish top three. Draymond is going to finish top three. He's not going to win Defensive Player of the Year, but he's going to finish top three. So if you have a top three MVP candidate and a top three defensive player of the year candidate, and you don't make the playoffs, under no circumstances can it be considered a success.
And I would argue, even if we were under the old rules and they were the eight seed, short of pulling a couple rounds of upsets, I wouldn't have considered it a success either. Pulling it back, I will say this. I do think one thing was successful for the Warriors this offseason. I think there was a legitimate sentiment that Steph and Draymond were past their primes. Steph missed all of last year with the hand injury, and he's 33 years old. Guards his size typically do not age well into their 30s. Now we're seeing Correct. Chris Paul yeah. play awesome. Steve Nash obviously won MVP at 33. I always felt confident that Steph could be productive into his mid-30s. But with that said, other NBA players were probably wondering, you know, is this the beginning of the end with him? And with Draymond Green, even more so, because we all know he's undersized and everyone's always kind of wondering, when is he not going to be able to do those things on defense that make him special? I think at minimum, they did accomplish the goal of showing other players around the league that Steph is still one of the four or five dudes who can lead a contender. Draymond showed he's not washed up. He can still lead a team defensively. I think if you're looking at it from a holistic perspective, they accomplished their goal going into the offseason that they are now, they're just a more attractive destination than they were last year.
Yes. I know. I agree with that. I think that's right. But that's also kind of an ancillary goal. They talked going into the year. And when I say they, I mean Steve Kerr, the front office, ownership,
the players, Steph and Draymond.
Yeah. That the goal was, you know, they thought they had a chance to be really good and they were going to try to get into next year. Get into the future. They were trying to thread the needle and bridge the gap between the two eras and do at the same time. And they did neither. Wiseman looked worse as we went along than he looked at the beginning. At the beginning of the season, the Warriors got their brains beat in a couple games. And it seemed very quickly like the goals kind of shifted. But this is a team that thought, you know, all the Kevin Peltons of the world and all of that, a lot of the projections had the Warriors 11th and 13th and something 14th. Going in the West. Right. So I think the team thought that was ridiculous. And I think that they expected to be a 5 or 6 seed. No, they did. Like, it is great that Steph still showed he can be that dude and Dre still showed he can be that dude in a different way. And I think that is meaningful going forward for one of the reasons that you said, especially because it seems like that can help attract some of those ring chasers, especially with Clay back. However, I think the Warriors culture and the Warriors reputation is no longer, I think it's about Steph entirely. It's no longer, I don't think they're going to get ring chasers anymore. I think they're going to get guys that want to play with Steph and want to be on a good team and it's fun. But I don't think they're going to get ring chasers anymore. If you miss the playoffs 2 years in a row, I think that like Warriors culture is dead.
They are definitely
or dormant at best.
They are, just being realistic about it, unless they swing some major move that puts another superstar across from Steph, they are somewhere as like a tier two destination for me right now. Mm-hmm. Just being realistic with it, like the Lakers and Nets are going to be more attractive if you're purely ring chasing. Can probably throw Philly Absolutely. In there. Well, I don't know. Philly could have another meltdown.
Right. But then the other issue with Philly is like people would rather play in San Francisco and live in the Bay Area than
sure.
and LA and Miami and even Phoenix, et cetera, other than Philly. The problem for the Warriors is that you're right about Steph and Draymond, and that is meaningful. But as far as chasing free agents and getting guys at a discount, as the Warriors are going to have to do because, you know, of all the guaranteed contracts,
the cap situation. Yeah.
Right. So the problem is anything that Clay would add to that. And Clay certainly will add to that, but anything that Clay adds to it is speculative because nobody will have seen him play by the time these guys are making their decisions. I mean, maybe they will have seen him, you know, the rumors will be going around in pickup, but you know, all of that's going to happen before training camp and before actual NBA games. So anybody that makes their decision because of what Clay theoretically is going to add, and I do think Clay is going to add a lot, it is speculative.
Yeah. So this actually ties in perfectly to friend of the show, Tim Kawakami's article. He threw out this line. they'll want to add one to two more dependable veterans on this roster. More grown-ups is a term I've heard. So let's start there. I think one of the reasons the season went as sideways as it went for the Warriors is every team has a couple pet development projects. Every playoff team does. You know, like the Clippers have Terrence Mann, who's kind of someone they play. They're hoping they can break into the rotation, right? But like, it's not like Talon Horton Tucker on the Lakers. The Lakers would like him to earn a spot, but he's like their pet project. They're not counting on him. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen.
Sure. Yeah.
The Warriors had probably 10 of those, maybe 8 on this roster. Like,
there are a bunch of pet projects and they on the Warriors roster.
A couple of them absolutely proved they could play, in my opinion. Like, we can argue about what Jordan Poole's ceiling is, but he showed he at least deserves to be in an NBA rotation.
I called him for a while after last year and then what the G League
guy. The early part of this year, yeah.
Yeah, I called him a 4A player because I thought he was too good for the G League and not quite good enough. I still have my concerns, especially defensively, but he is a perfect fit alongside Steph because forever, for as long as Steph has been there, they just had nobody else that would initiate offense and go get a bucket on their own. Obviously, Kevin Durant, but even those Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green offenses, as soon as Steph left the floor, they weren't any good. So I think there is a path there with Jordan Poole to reliable offense to stay afloat if it continues like it does in the 6 minutes in the second quarter and fourth quarter that he's going to sit. But your point is well taken that you just like, if you're going to be good, you cannot have this many pet projects and you cannot expect them and Smiley and even Poole and right. Damian Lee and Mulder and JTA and Looney and Pascal, all these dudes other than Steph, Dre and Clay are basically pet projects, and they've had some free roles on some of them. But I think that's also, and Wiseman, obviously, but I think that's an interesting question that is, I know you've talked about, I think it's Maples that has brought this up on your show a bunch before. They can't add another pet project. You can't go get the fifth pick or the sixth pick. And
see, this is where I disagree. I think they can, but it really needs to be like, we got Jonathan Kuminga and James Wiseman. And that's it for the projects. Everyone else is a veteran.
Exactly. Yes, exactly right. You can have Wiseman and Kuminga or...
Sure, know, I'm just picking an
insert,
name,
right? insert.
High upside prospect.
High upside rookie. You can do that, but then you cannot do that and be giving minutes to Michael Mulder and Damian Lee and, I mean, JTA, whatever, fine. But like, and Mannion and keep a roster spot for Smite. Like, you can't do both of those things. I think you can have Wiseman and Kuminga, let's say, on the roster. That's fine. But you can't have a roster around all of that that requires you to depend on those guys.
And then it gets back to the main issue, which is it's not that you want to trade the pick. It's that what are your avenues to get those grown-ups you want, which don't involve giving away picks. When I'm looking at this roster right now, I just kind of want to go through who we have as grown-ups on it going into next year. Obviously, okay. Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, when he comes back, is a grown-up. Looney is a grown-up.
Yeah,
Looney
knows what to do. He's not any good, but he knows.
Oh, come on, man.
He knows where he's supposed to be, and he knows how to play.
He's a reliable
exactly. backup. Yeah, I agree with that. Yes.
Wiggins is a grown-up. We can debate, you know, if they should be spending max money on him or anything like that. But objectively, actually, I want to talk about Wiggins. I thought he played excellent against the Lakers. I thought he was inconsistent against Memphis, and that's just kind of who Wiggins is. Like, that's a perfect way to sum him up.
I agree with all of that.
You can't really ask for better defense on LeBron than what he gave you on Wednesday night. You know, yeah, obviously LeBron was a little limited, but like in general, he has, outside of the top wing defenders, he's been as good as anyone at kind of being the man who picks up the other team's best guy.
I think it is fair, especially that was kind of the, he had a good season. He didn't score as much as he had in previous years, but he scored more efficiently. And I think he was somewhere between good to very good and occasionally excellent as a defender all season. Taking on the toughest or second toughest matchups, especially after Kelly Oubre was out for the season, hurt his wrist a bunch.
And even when Oubre was there, Wiggins was almost always better on assignment anyway.
I liked the fact that you and I talked about it. I liked the fact that Wiggins was kind of just steady and was always in front of his guy. And Oubre was a guy that was just so annoying, made some mistakes, but also had a bunch of blocks and a bunch of steals and was always in your jersey and was making athletic plays. So the kind of yin and yang, that the options that it gave.
Defensively, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. The options that it gave the Warriors to throw at other ball handlers or wings with the different looks, I think, was important. But so I think the Lakers game was a punctuation on Wiggins' season. And it really was kind of like proof of concept.
Right.
Like he can, but you're not going to get any better big wing. And the league is dominated by big wings. You're not going to get any better big wing than LeBron James. And so for a lot of the game, Wiggins had him in jail and, you know, scored reasonably well in the game also. So I think that was kind of proof of concept. And it really like put the cherry on top of the season and said, yes, this guy is somebody that can be depended on as a grown-up going forward. And then he was kind of against Memphis, but
in some ways I've described him on the show as a poor man's Paul George, where mm-hmm. a phenomenal defender, because you can never scheme him off the floor defensively. He can pick up multiple assignments. Like he's mm-hmm. he's never really a weakness that way. Super athletic, but will just like Paul George, it's like, I don't care. You're just never going to get them to stop taking jumpers. They're never going to be a guy. They're never going to be a guy who's, you're always going to feel like they should have got to the rim more.
They don't. They're both guys that do not use their athletic gifts
on offense
to impose on the game. Right. But I thought Wiggins did that a little bit more in the end of the season. You saw, he's a terrible rebounder for a guy his size and athletic ability, but you know, he was getting some tip dunks and, then in the Lakers game, you saw him really putting his body on LeBron, blocking LeBron's shot, led to a shot clock violation. So, yeah, I guess the point is, I agree with you. I think it's a good comparison, but I think it is fair to nudge Wiggins into the like grown-up can be dependent on going forward category.
I think he's a solid B player in the NBA who makes A money. That's generally who he is at this point.
Sure, yeah, but like, that's Joe Lacob's money. So like, I don't care what he makes at this point, as insofar as whatever. I mean, I understand that how it affects, you know, the reason it matters
is I'm trying to get to this point. We've named five grownups. One is off of two devastating leg injuries. Mm-hmm. One has had more hip surgeries than any 25-year-old should ever have. Mm-hmm. I just don't see like, okay. So hopefully,
I think JTA is a grown up, by the way, too. I think JTA can be included in that conversation.
He is a grown up. He's not going to score 20 points. I don't know how much better he's going to get than he is, but you can throw him out there and be comfortable with the fact that he will execute his assignment at a reasonably good level.
Yes.
So okay,
Jordan Poole is a better player than JTA. I would not consider him a grown up.
No. But I do feel comfortable with Jordan Poole in a quasi six man role going into next year. So, you know, I think he has higher upside than that too, but like, let's just keep it, you know, safe for next year. If he's giving you 15 to 20 minutes off the game of offense, happy. If he plays so well that you're forced to play him more, that's a good problem to have.
Yeah. I think the expectation probably for Jordan Poole next year, I think he scored something like 10, 11 points a game this year. I think a reasonable expectation for him next year is 14 to 16 a game off the bench. I don't know if this was a shot at Oubre or like kind of a subliminal shot at Oubre from Kerr, but Kerr, you know, basically said he's going to be our sixth man going forward. So I think it's fair to expect Poole to play, you know, 22, 24, 26 minutes a night and get you 14, 16 points a night.
So I agree with you. So what I'm getting at here is we're naming five to six players we feel confident will be on the roster next year. Everything on some level hedges on Clay's health. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many avenues they have to add. I think they need more than two grownups is what I'm getting at here.
Oh yeah, I agree with you.
I think they could, two grownups if we're talking about one of them being an all-star. But
sure.
But as it stands, I think they need more players than just two going forward.
Yeah, and also like maybe Oubre is back, maybe he's not. I happen to suspect. I think it is less likely than
they're just hoping to get a trade exception out of him to maybe add
or perhaps a sign and trade. I think it is asset mismanagement if they let him walk for nothing. Because if you let him walk for nothing, then you should have traded him for a second round pick at the trade deadline, even if you couldn't get Lonzo or whatever. So putting him aside, I agree with you. I think you need I would like a kind of like just steady third point guard. Probably. I think you want to let Jordan Poole play point guard, be the backup point guard. I would like kind of a steady guy in what everyone but me hoped Brad Monomaker would be, kind of in that role. Somebody who is actually like a grown up and decent.
Yeah. I get the idea of what they wanted with Monomaker. He just wasn't it.
Correct. One of these days on the I'm gonna release the transcripts of our text about Brad Wanamaker. Release the screenshots. I think they need three. I think they need a third point guard that's a grown up. I think they need another wing and a big. And I don't know how much the big would play, but just to have the option so you don't have to run into a situation like this again next year. I don't know that I'm the biggest Wiseman stand.
Sure, yeah.
But I don't know that you can count on him.
Yeah, you also
don't know that you can count on him.
You also want a vet just to make it easier for him.
And even if Wiseman's great, right? He's coming off a knee injury that he's not going to really have an off season. And the fact that they're just down to Looney and that's it. Now they've kind of like fallen into something that works, which probably should have been done earlier, but you see what happened. You just get beat up on the glass. So having the option to have another big body, and I don't think Marquese Chriss is it, having another big body as an option, as a grown-up. And those guys are not that difficult to find. Centers, like grown-up centers.
Yeah, that should not be the mid-level exception.
Correct.
The way I see it. That should be...
Correct.
You should be able to coerce someone at a veteran's minimum to buy you some time there. A Dwight Howard, correct, a JaVale McGee... they had JaVale in the past, but anyway,
yes, yeah,
you get my point.
Three-time champ JaVale McGee.
Imagine saying that a decade ago.
Oh, imagine Shaq having to say that.
So this kind of gets to my point, which is I don't know how they get those grown-ups to compete without trading Wiggins. I think it's going to be tough for them. And I'm not saying they need to trade Wiggins because he's not good. It's a cap issue where you would like that $30 million split over 2 to 3 players who can be good for you. When the Warriors were competing and the cap was at this number, they were paying Livingston $8 million, Iguodala $16 million. You could probably throw in some mid-level exception guys they've had for five. That's the same as Wiggins' salary right there. And that's how you – this is how you get from strength in numbers to strength in four guys, you know?
So I saw something on Twitter yesterday or the day before. I think it was yesterday after the Clippers lost to Dallas. A lot of people thought that Kawhi was going to go to the Lakers. And this person's assertion was not just because the Clippers had lost, but that Kawhi not coming to the Lakers did the Lakers a favor, because instead of having AD and LeBron and Kawhi, and there's your entire cap basically, like the Warriors do, it allowed them to spread the money around a little bit.
And have 10, 11 players, honestly.
Right. The Lakers are much deeper. So yeah, I think the answer to your question possibly is you hope you get one grown up with whatever you can do with Oubre's salary spot, whether that's Oubre, whether that's a sign and trade, whether that's a trade exception.
Get like a Evan Fournier down the line, like the Celtics.
You hope you get one
in like two years. Yeah,
the Celtics are going to get everybody. They're just hoarding assets. They're waiting for that one big move.
Next offseason, man.
You hope one of them is that Oubre salary spot. And again, maybe that's Oubre. I don't know. Maybe it's Oubre. I tend to, but it could be. So you hope you get one there. You hope you get one finally for the, seems like the first time in forever, the Warriors are actually going to have some exceptions that they can use in the offseason. So you hope that you can get one through one of the exceptions, depending on what that cause. And then you hope you get one through, you know, the veteran minimum things. You hope you get one decent player out
that
of
one guy, that one guy who really wants to play with Steph Curry.
Yeah. I mean, like whether that's last year, you know, I know the Warriors went after Baines and Gasol and Ibaka. Ibaka was going to cost more, but
sure.
You know, one of those type guys. And I think the most likely outcome is the guy that you can get on the cheap is probably a center, because there are plenty of just league average, decent centers on the market.
Someone's going to fall through the cracks.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, that makes sense.
So I think like three is the minimum answer, and that's assuming Clay is, you know, a reasonable version of himself.
Real sports fans love fantasy sports, but unfortunately, most fantasy sports platforms don't show that same love back, favoring the sharks and professionals over the casual fans. Superdraft.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Fantasy Sports is here to change that narrative with their new single game featured Champion Mode Contest. Focus on drafting the players you know from the games that matter to you, with no salary cap considerations when determining your lineup. Superdraft believes that the players, not the pros, deserve to win money, and they have the highest player win percentage in DFS to prove it. Sign up with Superdraft today, start playing, and win big. New players can use the code STEPHBETTER upon sign up and receive a $25 instant match on your first deposit. Also, don't miss out on their free to play sports book available in all 50 states to win prizes from a VIP stay at a Caesars hotel property to a PlayStation 5. Superdraft is available on both iOS and Android devices. Promo code STEPHBETTER.
Look, no one's perfect. Even the best baseball players strike out with the bases loaded. The best golfers sometimes three-putt with the tournament on the line. So if you feel like you're coming up short in the bedroom sometimes, it's perfectly okay. But if it's bothering you, there are options. Go to roman.com/lightyears now. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to getroman.com/lightyears and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving your home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Go to getroman.com/lightyears and get $15 off your first month. Look, there's a straightforward way to take care of your ED. Getroman.com/lightyears. Get started now to save $15 off your first month of treatment.
Now, this brings to what I think is the far more interesting conversation, which is we're all watching the playoffs right now.
Mm-hmm.
What should Warrior fans be watching for in terms of team building in the playoffs? See, I have this theory that the Warriors changed basketball 2014 to 16.
Yes.
Everyone caught up to them, but they had the trump card, which was Kevin Durant. So they did not have to necessarily think about the game in ways that other teams have. What I'm saying is, what skill set should they be looking for? Because I don't think they can run back a quasi strength in numbers squad where there's no ball handling, where it's really just like precision passing and Steph and Clay running off of screens forever.
Yeah,
like,
that doesn't mean.
I think they need to adapt and evolve from
there. Yeah, that's, yeah.
So, because I'm looking at all these playoff teams, none of these teams are as good as the KD Warriors, but I would argue the league average right now is a hell of a lot higher than it was in 2016. Like,
yes, the average, I think that is the Warriors are, those Warriors teams are responsible for that because everybody had to try to catch up and play a way that is empirically better. I think the thing to watch is, all right, so a lot of these teams have their stars, right? There's LeBron and AD and Luka and Dame and KD and blah, blah, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right? All the best teams have the best players. But I think what is important, funny how that works. I think what is important for the Warriors fans and for Warriors decision makers in front office, the thing that the Warriors have done very poorly in the last 5, 6, 7 years, maybe even a little longer than that, is the margins. The Warriors have failed along the margins. It didn't matter. It didn't matter when you had Steph making $11 million a year, so you could get KD and Clay and Draymond and Iguodala and Livingston, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But where the Warriors have, Jordan Poole is a step in the right direction. JTA is a step in the right direction. But all those failed late round picks, all the Omri Caspi move where he just won't shoot, like all the like little fringe stuff around the edges, you'll notice in the playoffs, that stuff matters, right? Alex Caruso, the Lakers found in the G League. He started the game 6 of the finals where the Lakers won it. That's like all of that stuff. You know, we're watching the Knicks game now and Quickly's going nuts. Like the stuff around the margins, all the little moves matter. You know, like Miami, Kendrick Nunn is there and Duncan Robinson, all like the stuff along
Tyler
the fringes.
Tyler Hero was a, what, number 14 pick?
He's especially, awesome here, especially way, in aggregate. Right. Yeah. Like you can get one or two of those wrong, but if you get a bunch of those right and get some momentum with it, all of those moves in the aggregate really add up to something or don't add
up
to something in the Warriors case.
You could argue that's 100% why Memphis won.
They have more good players than the Warriors. The Warriors
Memphis,
have the best
Memphis
players.
Had Ja Morant played well enough to like get to 85% of what Steph did that night. Something like that. Enough so that their depth took him home. Like Grayson Allen is a better player at this stage than Kent Bazemore, Michael Mulder, Desmond Bane was a great pick on their behalf. I mean, they have, you could argue, well, the Warriors definitely had the best player in the series. That's not, or in the matchup, that's not a question. And
the Warriors might have the best player in the world.
Yeah, exactly. My point is, all it took was Ja Morant having that one night where he comes close enough to matching Steph that their depth mattered.
Sure. And then the rest of it. And then and then what I'm talking about, everything on the fringes matter. Picking the right guy 28th or picking the right guy 14th.
And that's where I get a little worried because they're like, we feel we know what we need for last year. It's like, I hope it's not in the context of Steph averaging 37 a game because a lot of what happened in the last part of the season was Steph had a 2-month run that could match anyone's 2-month run in NBA history. And that's just not a sustainable,
Business no,
model.
Like, could that happen again? Could Steph do this
He's
again?
He's going to have
year?
A run at some point next year.
Could he do it again? Maybe. I wouldn't bet on it. In fact, probably not, just because
Do you want him to do it again? Like he was playing.
I personally I personally do want him to do it again because there is almost nothing more fun than me than watching the Warriors play when Steph does it. Like I am a grown man that has worked in the NBA for however long, and I giggle just like a kid when Steph is doing his thing. So yes, I do want him to do it again, but it's not a reliable strategy. As we saw, because even Steph was doing it now. He had a season that was similar, as good, better, maybe a little worse than his unanimous MVP season, and it wasn't good enough. So it is certainly, I hope, for the Warriors' sake, they are not relying on that as a strategy. Do I think Steph is going to be great again? Yes. Do I think that people should be encouraged that it looks like his prime is not closing, but we're just right in the middle of it. Yeah, I think that's encouraging. Well, but if you're expecting him to do this again,
I just don't know if his body can hold up on that type of work. I think this is the point I'm trying to get to with the league being better today than it was 4 years ago. The floor is higher. There's not the business model of like 20 years ago where it's like Kobe Bryant is going to get 25 to 30 shots a night and we're going to put a bunch of goons around him.
Mm-hmm.
You could make the playoffs and make noise with, you know, that, or like Allen Iverson. Iverson's whole career.
And you could also get, you could also sell out your building. And so there was ownership groups that didn't care. I mean, there still are some that don't care.
Sure.
We can sell out our building. We have one draw. We do it like hockey, right? We have Wayne Gretzky and then we have Marty McSorley and like a bunch of dudes around.
And it's just like, let's just get a bunch of dudes who can screen and rebound for him. Yeah. And even a decade ago, I think that you could probably win 50 games. I don't know that you can do that anymore in the NBA with anyone, honestly. Like, I think I think the floor is too high. I think like you could put prime LeBron James on a team of goons who screen, and I think they win at least 15 games less than those 08, 09 Cavs did. Because if you're not getting a baseline amount of shooting and ancillary playmaking, you're just not in the game.
I think the teams are going small now isn't really, it's not a really accurate description of what's happening.
It's skill.
It's skill. Yeah. And the average NBA player, even from 5 years ago, has so much more skill than they did then that the difference between Steph or LeBron and whoever compared to the average player, I think that gap is smaller.
And I also think
because the average guy is so much more skilled than he was.
I don't know. Like, even 5 years ago, Enes Kanter got $70 million.
Yeah.
Today, that player is available for under a vet minimum. Or sorry, under the mid-level exception.
They're on the street. Those guys are on the street.
You find one for 2 to 3 a year.
Those guys are on the street.
5 to 6 years ago, if you had an elite defender who could hit 34% of their threes, you're like, that's a 3-and-D guy. Now, you have to be so special on defense to... You basically have to be like Prime Iguodala or Draymond, which ironically the Warriors have had both, to get away with being that little of a shooting threat.
Yeah, you almost can't anymore, because especially this year, you almost can't anymore. If you're not any good offensively, you almost can't do it anymore, because offense continues to be more and more and more important than defense. And that gap, I think, is widening. Offense just matters more than defense. And the best teams were the best offensive teams as opposed to the best defensive teams this year. So I think that gap is going to widen. And you and I talked at the beginning of the season, the Warriors trying to surround, like, Steph can carry us on offense and then we'll just put a bunch of guys around that are going to guard. And I kept telling you, no. You need to maximize Steph's offense. I don't care if Jordan Poole is not going to guard anybody. I don't care. Like, I need Wiseman out there shooting threes if he's going to be out there. You got to give whatever minutes Steph is on the floor, you need to maximize his offense because it just matters more. That's how you win games in the NBA now. It's not
particularly
the same.
And particularly with how it's officiated. We never mentioned this one, but it's like the overemphasis on freedom of movement. Like, you can't goon up someone defensively the way you could a decade ago. Mm-hmm. And that's fine, but you have to, I want to liken this to the NFL. The way the NFL officiates almost makes secondary play irrelevant. Like, all defensive play in the NFL has to do with the pass rush, because you can't even have a Legion of Boom type defense. Like, you could have prime Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman and those guys. They couldn't do the things today that they could do a decade ago. They just can't.
No, they used to, right. They were coached to interfere on every play. They were literally coached and they're like, they're not going to call it.
Right.
Now,
exactly.
Now you can't touch anybody. I think that is similar. And I'm not like, I think it's smart for the NBA, right? Despite what some people say about the social justice stuff and how nobody watches the NBA anymore. They're like, that's not true. And I think it's smart for the NBA to tend towards offense, because that's
I personally don't like it. Like, I like a little resistance in my basketball, but like with that said, like, you're not supposed to build a team based off like my ideological preferences. It's supposed to build a team that's going to get you results, right?
Correct. Like, and that's, and I think that bringing back to the Warriors specifically now in the last few years, I think that's been the problem, is that they have very badly, and it's the name of your podcast, right? They've wanted to prove how smart they are and be ahead of everybody else. And they've wanted to win on their terms and not. So I used to, when I lived, grew up in San Francisco, and my brother and I used to go to A's games. When we were driving back, he says, whatever, 25, 30 years ago, 25 years ago, when we were driving back, we'd listen to Love Lines, you know, the radio show back in the day, right?
I forgot about Love Lines.
One of the things that stuck with me driving back over the Bay Bridge back to the city. But one of the things that always stuck with me is Carolla and Dr. Drew. They both might be weirdos, but whatever. Something that stuck with me is they used to always tell people, deal with reality on reality's terms, right? Like, not what you hope it should be or think it should be.
Right.
Like, what is it actually? Yeah. And so with the Warriors, it's like, what is it actually? It doesn't, like, fine, we want to play this way. We think it's better. Okay, fine. But that doesn't work right now. That doesn't work anymore. So I think it is time for the Warriors to start dealing with reality on reality's terms and get, again, maybe ahead of the curve again.
And I just want to, and to tie this back to Andrew Wiggins, who I'm a huge fan of his game. I'm a huge fan of what he's done for the Warriors. I think he's a little underrated.
Mm-hmm.
How valuable is that wing defense in context of a shooter's league? And it just makes me wonder if their only move to build a contender around the core, which is valuable to them. It doesn't sound like they want to break up their core unless they get,
sure.
Milwaukee calls them and they're like, man, we really want Draymond for Giannis. You know, like, something like that.
Unless Milwaukee loses in the first round or the Clippers lose in the first round.
Anyway, but you follow what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I wonder if their best route to get the talent to truly replenish the roster and give Kerr and Steph and the whole team kind of like the options to play in a more souped up offensive era involves trading Wiggins' huge contract. Nothing against Wiggins. He's been useful. It's just kind of like you're not under the cap. So something has to give.
Yes, there has to be a cap casualty of that. Yeah. I mean, I would trade Wiggins before Draymond, before Clay, obviously before Steph, but
it depends.
Yeah, but part of the problem is, like, if you trade Wiggins, it's kind of like two steps forward and one step back, right?
Because
then you still, like, because then now we're still missing it. Like, there's a dearth of adults as it is. And so if you trade one of them.
Well, I'm not suggesting trading him for like picks, you know?
but even if they trade him, right? Like, go trade him for, throwing a name, like Bradley Beal, right? You trade him for Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal is obviously a wonderful player. But you still need more adults, right? Because that's like, you're giving up an adult or a guy we've said is probably an adult. They still need more adults.
What about something like the Pacers? Let's say they want to blow it up. I know
both of y'all, you and Andy, both love the Brogdon and Miles Turner.
That's not doing it for you.
Yeah, no, I think, well, what's the deal? It's your Wiggins and the picks for...
Let's say you have to throw the Wolves pick in there. Yeah.
You're talking about... it's Wiggins, Wiseman, the Wolves pick, and...
Maybe a future
Look pick. At that alliteration. For
W's Brogdon only and, here.
For Brogdon and Turner.
Yeah.
Too much? That's tough. I consider it. That's tough. That's not one where I have to say yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. I think part of, you know, we always say when everybody's doing the trade machine is like, why is the other team going to do this? So knowing what we all know about Indiana and their goals, I don't know why Indiana does that. Because Indiana very specifically
doesn't want to bottom out ever.
Yeah.
They're not interested in playing the upside game with
Wiseman.
They're
never going to win anything, but they also are not going to rebuild. So I don't know that is interesting. I mean, I think that's a worthwhile consideration, but I don't think Indiana is that interested in Wiggins and a bunch of kids.
Okay. All right. We're going to leave it here. We're going to have a lot more off-season content. Once again, check out the Lightyear store. We're going to post We're going to have another pod on Wednesday. Andy will be back, and we will have some locker room time. So we'll make sure to tweet out when those will be. Aaron, I appreciate you as always, man.
My pleasure. Now, remind me now again. I got to get my merch. Where do I go? I'm going to check your the Twitter. Check the link tree in the Twitter.
Check the Twitter. I'll shoot you the link.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.